This is a guy that I've been looking forward to talking to all week. He is the executive director of the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. It's Edward Jiske, and he's joining us this morning. And Ed, first off, it's good to meet you.
Well, good to talk to you, too.
Recreational marijuana. Now, it's kind of interesting because I've been watching the other states that have brought it online, and I've watched the problems that have kind of come from it. And it seems like and I'm not sure exactly why, but I know there's other things to consider than behind the wheel and high, but that seems to be where I want to start when we talk about reasons why recreational marijuana could be a problem.
Well, the police chief certainly think it is. In fact, we're convinced it will be. And in fact, one of the data seem clear that there more people will die on the roads who have marijuana in their systems. There will be more accidents, and more people will be hospitalized after doing various things under the influence of marijuana. And how can that be good?
You know, one of the items that so often I see, in particular, it seemed like Colorado, was that there's no way to test somebody. I mean, you've got a breathalyzer for alcohol, but that seems to be one of the points of issue here is there's no reliable way to say, okay, this guy's got, you know, he's X number high.
That's correct. There's no device like that, and that makes enforcement considerably more difficult for law enforcement and for the driver, because if there's a suspicion that the driver's impaired, you have to take them to a hospital or some other place and have a blood test done. And that's it's really inconvenient for everybody, but it's the only way to test for impairment right now. And everybody says, well, the proponents will say, well, a device is on the way or one's being tested here or there. But the fact of the matter is there is no device right now that, say, the Carbondale Police Department could go by and use and make it stand up in court. And so that's one of the issues. And then the next issue is, you know, everybody assumes that some device will come along. And what's that going to cost? And who's going to buy all that equipment? That has not been resolved either.
I know that. So I'm one of the other states I did was testing a device, but I don't remember the outcome of it. Because, I mean, you know, here it's 0.08, right? Everybody knows that when it comes to alcohol. But is there, because I keep thinking there is, Ed Wojcicki is joining us. He's executive director of the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. Because I keep thinking if somebody is injured and you do go a blood test, there is a number there when it comes to marijuana, or is it just its presence?
Well, there's a number, and they talk about how much THC is in your system, but there's a number that you can detect and say there's this much THC in your system, but that still doesn't say whether you're impaired or not.
Right.
It just says that there's that level in your system, and one of the differences between that and alcohol is that THC can stay in your system for weeks. And it can be detected, but it doesn't mean that you're impaired.
Right. It's kind of binary in nature. It's there or it's not. The Chiefs of the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police is one of three groups that have come out here in the last days, along with the Chicago Crime Commission and Drug Free America Foundation, that say, whoa, wait a second, because and I know you've seen this, Ed, same as I have. It's not how, it's when. It's not if, it's when. And I've seen this headline a number of times in Illinois when it comes to recreational marijuana, like it's a foregone conclusion. And, you know, we talked about the aspect of driving, but there's another aspect, and I'm really curious about your opinion on this, Ed. The prohibition, right? Can you see recreational marijuana through the prism of prohibition, what prohibition and alcohol did, created crime syndicates, while at the same time understanding that right now marijuana sales fuels criminal activity and cartels and on the list goes and local drug dealer, whatever the case. Is there correspondence there, some logic that we can learn from prohibition and draw into the marijuana aspect, especially when it comes to money and crime?
Well, yeah, I don't want to get too much into the comparison, even though that's a valid thing. But here's what I would say about that is that, you know, we have medical marijuana in Illinois right now, and it's very tightly regulated. And we are saying to the sponsors, if you're going to proceed with this, let's regulate it as like we're regulating medical marijuana. And what does that do? There's really strict controls over who can grow it, who can distribute it, who can sell it, where it can be sold, and so forth. And we would like to see those same kind of controls in place, because with the controls over who can grow it, the cartels haven't come into Illinois like they've gone into Colorado and just, or in California, and just grow it wildly and then just sell it all over the country. And so we think that that's would be my answer to that about, you know, can it be regulated? Yes, it can, and Illinois has already proved that with medical marijuana.
Age, 21 and older?
That would make sense, yes.
Because that was one of the items. Because I talked to the director of Normal on Monday, and of course you and I, we're familiar with the National Organization of Reform of Marijuana Laws, and you know that this is, you know, an idea that they're all behind, and a lot of other people, including the governor, said he's behind it. But what's interesting is you and I have talked about, you know, driving. It's, I think there's a common denominator there, but I think there are a lot of ramifications from this that we really haven't taken the time to look at, even though some other states have experienced these social ills. I mean, because, Ed, I mean, in the state of Illinois, are we willing to become drug dealers to dig ourselves out of the financial hole? I think that's the question.
Well, you know, we don't even comment on, you know, the money, except to say if there is going to be some money, just remember that law enforcement is going to need more to regulate it. But the indicate when you're billions of dollars in the hole to get a few hundred million more, while that's not anything to sneeze at, it's not going to solve the problem, and it's not even going to come close to solving the financial problem.
You know, you don't solve the financial problem, and it's a genie that you probably are never going to get back in the bottle.
Well, that's true. That's true. And you know, one of the big issues about this too is the home grows, and I don't know if you've talked about that before.
No, I haven't.
One of the things that we've heard from our colleagues in Colorado, they said the biggest mistake they made was not to push to prohibit home grows, because what happens when people are allowed to grow it in their homes? And, you know, and people say, well, what's the harm in having a few plants? Well, what's happened there is the bad guys have gone into Colorado and California, and they're just renting out places and growing it by the ton and then selling it willy-nilly. And it's harder to get a warrant, because if home grows are allowed and you go to a judge and say, well, you know, we think that there's marijuana in there, the judge might say, well, of course there is. They're allowed to grow it. And so it's a real problem. And that's something that we're talking to the sponsors about, and we're not sure if that's going to be in the bill or not.
What Ed's referring to here, and I've read quite a bit about this, they go in, rent a house, every bedroom, the basement, the living room, the study, the attic, all have marijuana plants and heat lamps and grow conditions. They literally use every square foot to grow, harvest, run out, pay an exorbitant amount maybe to the person who's renting them the home, leave the place pretty much wrecked out because you've turned it into a farm, and then make a bunch of money and move on. You know, and I have read about this and some of the techniques that law enforcement have used to catch them, including watching the surge on the power bills and things along that line, and infrared cameras as well. But you forget every time, and I'm really glad you brought that up, because every time we bring up one subject, it seems to take you to another problem. I mean, you've seen this too. You think, oh yeah, but what about this? I mean, if I were to ask you, oh yeah, what about this? What else would you mention, Ed, as being an issue when it comes to legalized recreational marijuana?
Well, we are really concerned about teenagers and children, and our school resource officers, those are officers assigned to work in schools, we do a survey with them every year, and they're already reporting an increase in marijuana incidents in schools across the state since decriminalization, which we supported, by the way, but there has been an increase because society's already said, well, maybe it's not so bad. And so since we're already seeing that increase, and we're also seeing an increase in edibles and vaping in the schools, and there's been stories about children being transported to hospitals out of the schools because they ate gummy bears with marijuana in them. We think that the regulation of products has to be very tight, but we wonder whether any regulation would be enough to keep it away from kids, which, I mean, everybody would want to say we've got to keep it away from kids.
You know, but when you see the governor come out and say, you know, I'm in favor of this, there's a lot of momentum, as I mentioned earlier. It's not, you know, an if, it's a win. It's not a how, it's a win. And I saw a couple articles, you know, cautioning Illinois to slow down in its process, that there are a lot of rules to be written here, money to be gained from corporations who want to sell recreational marijuana. Have you heard about any potential legislation, its speed, its presentation? I know you do a lot of work in Springfield representing the Association of Chiefs of Police. Have you heard even a tentative plan legislative-wise?
Well, the early plan was to get it done very quickly, like this month. But the bill hasn't come together yet, and so we don't know of a definite plan yet. The language in the bill hasn't even been made public yet by those who are sponsoring it and putting it together. And so, not for sure. We certainly know it seems to be a priority of the new governor, but we don't know for sure when it might come. But there are a number of groups lining up to express their concerns, and we're among them.
I wonder, and I had a number of people reach out after doing the normal interview earlier in the week, of what happens to that guy who's in prison for selling an ounce of pot. What do you think should happen if they recreational marijuana is legalized? What would happen, or what do you think should happen, maybe even, to that person who's in jail for a crime that's no longer a crime?
Well, I think that it would be fair to take a look at that. And certainly, but I also wonder how many people are in prison for selling an ounce of pot. I don't happen to have that data. Usually people don't go to prison for that. It's usually a build up from one thing to the next,
right.
and it's not for that. But I think it would be fair to look at that, and to look at the record of people who have been convicted only of very minor marijuana offenses.
There's one aspect that bothers me more than any other, and this includes behind the wheel and high, especially with pot as good as it is now, right? It's not like 40 years ago, ditch weed,
right,
as they used to call it. And people say, no, it's not a gateway drug. Well, bull. I didn't fall off the cabbage wagon yesterday. You know, but then again, so is a can of beer. But that aspect, I think, is one of the things, knowing human nature, and that, oh, this isn't so bad, so let me try this other thing. You know, that's probably one of the aspects, and it's really hard to qualify. I mean, you get people argue about this all day about whether it's a gateway drug. I've already shared with my opinion on this because I know what how it's affected people in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your thoughts there in the gateway aspect? Because what we're talking about is a gateway where, you know, police chiefs and officers across the state have to deal with a new group of people who thought, well, marijuana is good. Hey, that was all right. Let me try cocaine.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any question that it is a gateway drug. And that's something that we need to be concerned about. At the same time, I would say, I don't want the argument to be about whether it's a gateway drug, because, you know, we've already talked about lots of issues that are directly about marijuana. So, but I think I heard your normal interview, and I think we need to be concerned that it is a gateway drug.
I love a guy who does his homework.
Thank you.
When you mentioned, you said, because you heard the interview on Monday. Do you have any thoughts after you heard that and Nestor Naguib, that what you think in relationship to that interview that you can share with us before we depart today?
Well, I think I thought that it really was a good interview. And what I heard there were it's the kind of conversation that's going on in Springfield and Chicago right now, talking about various sides of this issue. The one thing that I would say is it's pretty clever on the part of the proponents to say it is inevitable and it's not a question of if but when, and that might be true, but it's pretty clever to try to get everybody to believe in that's true, because we just do have to wait and see.
There was a guy I was talking to on the phone the other day about this subject, and he says, "What about medical marijuana?" I said, "You know, I went to the marijuana facility where they grow with a group of legislators, and they were saying it's medicine. And when I saw one of the names with Death Star, I'm thinking it's the only place that you could have a medicine called Death Star, and people go, oh, no, it's good." You know,
yeah.
I realize it's marketing and that's the name of the breed, but still, I think little glimpses of reality creep through every once in a while. You know, my medicine's called Death Star. It's the best. So,
yeah. Well, we opposed that at the time, but we have seen that it's been pretty fairly and carefully regulated, and that's the one good thing I can say about that.
Ed Wojcicki, he is the executive director of the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. Ed, I hope this is not the last time I talk to you. Before we went on the air, Ed was telling me, you know, that he'd talked to Dawn Tondini, that she's an active member in the Association of Chiefs of Police, and we were talking about her retirement. I think there's going to be some special activities for her to kind of commemorate that. And you've been down and worked with the SIU Police Department and the City of Carbondale Police Department in your 4 years, 10 years as Chief of Police Association.
That's correct. Yeah, I've been down in that area a number of times, and we have some really good law enforcement leadership, and we try to work with them and people elsewhere in the state.